there is a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
Hey everybody, this is Tony, your host of Between Light, Shadow, Science, and Superstition. And today we're coming to you with a little brief mini episode. It's a special episode because it's Friday the 13th. Now every year, Friday the 13th falls in the month of October, which as we all know is the month that the Twilight Zone premiered, October 2nd, 1959 to be exact. And it doesn't hurt that the holiday Halloween is in the same month. I figured, you know, it would be a good transition back into the show. You know, as we all know, I've been away for a little while, but I thought, you know, entering back into the fifth dimension, especially with a Friday the 13th episode, would be a great way to really start getting the ball rolling. So you may ask, well, you know, why are we having an episode in May, you know, at least at the time of this recording or when this particular episode is premiering, or if you're, you know, listening to it. First of all, I know you could be listening to it in 2070, if podcasts are still around. I don't know exactly what we have at that time, but hey, it's the fifth dimension. But, so the last time Friday the 13th fell on Friday in May was in 2016. And, well, the next time Friday the 13th falls on Friday in May, it will be 2033. So I don't think you guys are probably going to want to wait that long for some extra special episodes of the Twilight Zone podcast here. So I said, and since it'll be another 13 years before Friday the 13th falls in May again, what better time than now, while I'm just jumping back into the full swing of the fifth dimension. So tonight, we'll be covering 13 of what I consider the creepiest episodes of the Twilight Zone, with a couple of honorable mentions along the way. So let's jump into a couple of these episodes. Just to let you know, these episodes are what I consider some of the creepiest episodes, and because of watching them when I was a child and seeing the reveals and just the atmosphere and the music. So a lot of what I'm considering to be creepy episodes, all of these elements are within each and every one of these episodes. And just to let you know, we will have full spoilers. So if you haven't seen these episodes, you may want to pause it right here. Take the day. You know, it's Friday the 13th, right? If you have the time, just take the day and just go and just watch a few of these episodes, the ones that you haven't seen on this list. But I'm pretty sure if you are a listener of this show, I'm pretty sure you've probably seen at least majority of these, because a lot of these episodes are episodes that are really heavily in pop culture, and you've probably seen all of them, you know, for the most part, at least several times. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode here. So I'm going to go through season by season. It's not necessarily the, best to worst. It's just, or, you know, creepiest to, you know, less so. But I'm just going to go through season by season, and then along the way, introduce some honorable mentions along the way. So starting off in season one. So we have what I consider the Hitchcockian, the most Hitchcockian episode of the Twilight Zone, and that is the hitchhiker. And this is basically following Nan Adams along her travel from New York to Los Angeles or San Diego. It's one of those areas. And she has a blowout and she has a tire fix. Now, I've already covered this episode in detail, so I'm not going to go too much into it. But just the whole her talking to herself in her head along this long drive and just constantly seeing this hitchhiker along the way. Like I said, I've covered this episode, but there was one element of this episode that just really bothered me, and I didn't cover it because I didn't want to really get into that. But I thought about a theory about this. Okay, so along the way, Nan Adams is, you know, she's okay. So the reveal is she's a ghost at the very end, and the guy who's been beckoning her along the way is also a ghost, and he's been trying to get her to come with him to wherever he's going back to, whether it's a part of the Twilight Zone in the fifth dimension or wherever. So I had this theory, you know, because I was like, wait a minute, she is, throughout the whole episode, she's interacting with all of these people and everything, and she had this, you know, this trauma that happened to her. And I've read a lot of things about the paranormal, things like that, when things tragically happen to someone and they haven't fully come to the realization that that they are dead, and they're still living or going about their daily life as if they're still alive. And I'm thinking in all these scenarios where she's going through, and she's going through all these different things along the way, that she's dead, but she seems like she's still in a physical form and people are interacting with her. So why could that possibly be? And this leads me to one of the areas that is, you know, it really includes the creep factor within these episodes. I'm thinking, okay, the first person that we see her interact with is the guy, the mechanic. He comes to repair her tire. And then she goes to the little gas station there and interacts with the person there. And then she goes to the diner, and then she goes to meet with the man that runs the gas station because she needs gas. And then there is this sailor going back to his Navy ship in San Diego, and she's interacting with all of these people, and then she finally makes this call. And but during all of this, maybe I'm thinking, maybe this was all manufactured in her mind. She's already in the Twilight Zone. Once she had that blowout, she left the normal plane and left to the other plane, and all these people are basically just like her. They've had all of these things that have happened to them, like the sailor along the road. Maybe he got hit by a car, or the gas station owner at the house. Maybe he had a heart attack in his bed and he's not actually there. Well, there's the diner, because we see when she's talking to the diner owner or worker within, everyone else is just separated apart, and it's just them two. And she's almost like she's having this conversation out into the air, especially when she freaks out right before going out of the door, saying she hates the car. And all her interactions are just with these people, just even her on the railroad track. And I just loved this episode because it just built up the tension from beginning to end. We're trying to figure out, why is this guy seeing her? Why? And he could be almost as if, like with the sailor, maybe he was walking along the road and got hit by a car and he's on the side. So there are just all these elements to this episode that are just really creepy, not excluding the wonderful score. Now, we get to the next episode in season one, which I think is one of the creepier episodes. It's Mirror Image. So this is Millicent Barnes, and she's in the train station, and she's basically seeing her doppelganger. And this young gentleman comes up to her, and basically the same thing happens to him, but it's just the music and the rain outside, and just the conductor, but the gentleman at the ticket booth. He's sitting there. He's announcing, you know, when the buses come and go, the announcer pretty much. And he, you know, he's like, even she gives me the willies when he's talking to the other guy. And she's talking about all these, you know, different planes of existence and this, you know, just really getting philosophical. And I just love the fact that, you know, she sees her mirror image on the bus with this sly smirk on her face, and she just freaks out and she completely loses it. And there's all these little things happening. Her bag's not here one moment and it is, and he's the ticket or the announcer, he's saying that she's been up there several times, when, you know, even when she goes to the bathroom, the woman that's in there cleaning the powder room, she's saying, you know, you okay? You've been in here several times. And she's like, I haven't been in here at all. And she's just losing her mind at this moment, and it's just so creepy. I just love the whole atmosphere and just the bus station late at night, and just this eeriness. And if anyone's ever been in a bus station or a train station at night and there's no one there and there's just quietness, it's very, very unsettling. So there, we find out that possibly these doppelgangers are replacing them, because we see that, you know, and thinking about this episode, I was like, she gets carted off to jail by the, or wherever, a facility by the police at the very, very end of this episode. But what I think a lot of people haven't thought about or realized is that that image of her, that copy, the doppelganger, has gone on to where she was going to go, because she was already on the bus. So has she taken over her life and, you know, assumed what she was going to do with that new job? That's really creepy to think about. And, you know, and her family wouldn't know the difference, because she, you know, this other image of the gentleman that basically called the police, but he was really nice, but he just didn't know what to do. And at that time, you know, you didn't know what resources you had. So I thought this was a very, very interesting episode. Now, an honorable mention here is Nightmare as a Child. And this is with Helen Foley. And she's a school teacher and a little girl. And there's nothing that says creepier than a little girl that is just, you know, just has this little voice. And there's just nothing creepier about it. She just has this blank stare on her face. But I'm not going to get too much into that, because I really can't wait to cover that episode. Okay, and then there is what I consider one of the creepiest episodes of the Twilight Zone. It's up there and definitely in the top five. It's The After Hours. So yeah, we get this young lady, and she's come to this department store, and she's trying to find this floor that necessarily isn't there. And she's talking to the department owners, the managers, and they're saying there is no, you know, there's no ninth floor here, or you know, she's going back and forth with them. Well, yes, there is. I bought this. You know, do you have a receipt? Do you have this? No, I bought cash. And it's just not making sense until we get to the scene where she is left in the department store alone at night, which I don't know why they would have done that, but okay, we're going to go with it. It serves a story, right? So she's left there in the department store, and she starts walking around, and it's really eerie, it's quiet, and the music is just and just that call out to her over and over again from she doesn't know where. And she it's just her walking through that department store at night is just, it lends to the creep factor. And then we get the mannequins. And we ultimately find out that the mannequins, when they come to life, she is a mannequin. And she's allowed to be let out, you know, once a month or something like that. And it's just, it drew me in. I'm trying to figure out what is going on with this entire thing, you know. And as a child seeing this episode, this freaked me the hell out the entire time. And that ending, that just messed with me for a long time afterwards. All right, so we're going to jump to season two. And one of the creepier episodes, and I think this was definitely supposed to be one of those episodes, like, okay, this is, you know, this is our monster verse movie. You know, kind of like a MCU, Marvel Cinematic Universe. This was kind of like in that realm of the time, because the monster movies at that time were so popular, especially slightly before this, in the 30s, 40s, and up to the 50s. So they had to do their version of a monster movie, and this was definitely it. Instead of doing a monster, it was a satanic take on it. So the Howling Man, we get this man, he's sick, he's traveling around Europe, he comes to this, basically amounts to a religious cult, and, you know, he gets these, you know, guys in robes, and they have these staffs, which were originally supposed to be crosses, but we'll go, you know, with what we've got here. And this was just so it was just so creepy, the atmosphere, and that slight tilt that they did on the camera every single time, and the atmosphere with the rain and thunder outside, and the wailing in the background. That's all you need to say about this episode. it was great. And just the transformation of the gentleman that was in the jail cell, he is basically, he goes from being the guy to, yeah, this is Satan. So yeah, that was a big jump. All right, we're gonna go to probably one of the most classic episodes of the Twilight Zone, and it is The Eye of the Beholder. And just us not being able to see any of their faces throughout this entire episode, because I think everyone that has that thinks of the Twilight Zone, they think of this episode specifically. And the young lady is laying in the bed, she's having these surgeries because she doesn't conform, because that's what their whole society is about, conformity. And she's sitting in the bed, and we don't see any of the doctor's face, we don't see anyone's face probably into the last 5-6 minutes of the episode. And it comes to turn out that, you know, we're thinking that she's the ugly one and the other ones are the beautiful ones, but it's actually the reverse. And we get these doctors and all of these people within, they are actually they have like these pig-like faces. And it was just so well done, because it was shot in a way to where every time we would try to get a glimpse of someone's face, there will be a shadow, or there would be something that would come in front of it. So it was really well done, and this was an episode that I think really could have been an hour episode, not necessarily with, you know, the obscuring their faces the entire time, but maybe diving further into that, you know, story once she gets to the concentration camp, as she says in the episode. But, you know, one of the classic episodes of the Twilight Zone. All right, and we're going to Long Distance Call. Okay, so this episode is so creepy on so many levels. You have the grandmother, which is creepy from the get-go to me, and because she's trying to make, you know, her grandson her own, and you see some resistance from the parents, specifically the mom, because of course, you know, this is not about her, you know, it's his birthday, and she's making it all about her. And then she passes away, And she really says some hurtful things to her son on the way out the door. So there's some animosity between them. And they are just... overcome with some really, really emotional turmoil at this point. And she gives him this phone for his birthday. And he's talking to her and he's calling her. And she's basically trying to get him to come to wherever she is. And we don't know where that is. And just imagine how much worse it could be if it were possibly hell or some other place. But this was a really creepy episode. And she's really trying to get him, if you think about it, she's trying to get him to commit suicide because he goes out into the street and tries to get run over by a car. He tries to drown himself. And for 1960s television, this, I don't know how this got past the censors with so many other things that couldn't be allowed on TV. You couldn't sleep in the same beds with a person, but you could have a child drown themselves on TV. So with all that being said, I just don't see how that was able to get past them. But this is a perfect episode, a great episode. Like I said, the music, and just because it was filmed on videotape also, it gave it that feel, that really weird feel. And it was just really off-putting, not in a bad way, but it was it just got you very, very uncomfortable throughout the entire episode. All right, going to season 3, The Passersby. So this is another ghost episode. So we get, these walkers, soldiers are walking by on this path in front of this plantation style Victorian home, which I know a lot about because I see a lot of those around where I live, because I live in the southeast of Georgia. And this woman is on the porch, and she's basically sitting there waiting for her husband to get back, or she's thinking he's gonna come back, and he's pretty much dead. And we come to find out that all of these people that are passing by are actually dead, and including her and everyone, because it's post-Civil War, the South has lost. So we get this really creepy music that continues to play throughout the entire episode. Like I said, the music and the atmosphere, and just slightly not being able to see, and just them looking hot and sweaty. I don't know, that was a real big thing in the Twilight Zone episode. Everybody looks hot and sweaty, and not in a good way. But I just think that this episode played really well for what it is. And of course, with all these episodes, there are so many different undertones going on, and I'm not even going to even get into a lot of what these episodes mean, at least not right now, because some of them I've covered, and a lot of these episodes I haven't covered yet. So we're going to dive deep into them once we get to them. Okay, the next episode, for me, it is one of the creepier episodes, and it all has to do with atmosphere, and it's The Grave. And The Grave, basically, this cowboy, Connie, he comes back into town because he's been looking for this outlaw for so long. That's from that very town he comes back to, come to realize that the town, specifically one person, because there was 8 bullets that were shot out and only one bullet hit him. So they have basically killed this outlaw themselves. And he comes back into this little dusty, rundown pub, if you will. And everybody's telling the stories about, hey, you know, you didn't really look for him, and his reputation is really taking some hits here. And of course, if you've watched any of these old cowboy shows, you'll know that that this was a real big thing for and to them. So this really really played well within this this episode. And there's just this music, and the haunting of the gravesite, and just not seeing, and just the outlaw sister coming back, and she's got like this really creepy laugh. She's really beautiful, but you can tell there's this extreme tinge of madness going on with her.
There's a payphone outside, and I'm going to call home. Back to New York. Put in a call to my mother, so I can speak to someone familiar. Someone I love. Someone to bring back reality to me. Just a voice. A warm, familiar voice, so I won't lose my mind.
Operator. I'd like to make a call to my home in New York City. My name is Nan Adams. The telephone number is Trafalgar 41098. Hello, Mother.
This is Mrs. Adams' residence. Whom do you wish to speak to, please?
Who's this?
This is Mrs. Whitney.
Mrs. Whitney? I don't know any Mrs. Whitney. Is this Trafalgar 41098?
Yes, it is.
Where's my mother? Where's Mrs. Adams?
She's still in the hospital. A nervous breakdown.
Nervous breakdown? But there's nothing the matter with my mother. What do you mean, a nervous breakdown?
Well, it's all taken place since the death of her daughter.
The death of her daughter? What do you mean, the death of her daughter? Who's this? What number is this?
It's all been very sudden. Nan was killed just 6 days ago in an automobile accident in Pennsylvania. A tire blew out and her car turned over.
Very odd. The fear has left me now. I'm numb. I have no feeling. It's as if someone had pulled out some kind of a plug in me, and everything, emotion, feeling, fear, has drained out. And now I'm a cold shell. I'm conscious of things around me now. The vast night of Arizona. The stars that look down from the darkness. Ahead of me stretch 1,000 miles of empty mesa. Mountains, prairies, desert. Somewhere among them, he's waiting for me. Somewhere I'll find out who he is. I'll find out. I'll find out what he wants. Though just now, for the first time, looking out at the night, I think I know. I think I know.
I believe you're going my way.
Nan Adams, age 27. She was driving to California, to Los Angeles. She didn't make it. There was a detour through the Twilight Zone.
formula Halo, the newly mild shampoo specially prescribed for beautifying oil-robbed hair, brings you The Twilight Zone. The Twilight Zone is brought to you by the new Polaroid 10-second automatic camera. Only three buttons to push. One, two, three. And in just 10 seconds, a finished picture.
So finishing off season three here, this is just an honorable mention, and it's A Good Life. This is a great episode, and whenever anyone thinks about this episode, they put this up there in the same stratosphere, on the same pedestal as The Eye of the Beholder or To Serve Man. It's a good book, right? These are the episodes that everyone, as soon as they think about The Twilight Zone, these are the three episodes that they think about. And, this episode is all about a little boy who is a monster because he has control over the adults in his life in this little town that is now a village. And he's basically turned the town back, as Rod Serling says, into the archaic times, just an archaic way of thinking, of being, just that whole, he's turned time back, and they're no longer using the modern comforts of daily life, and he's controlling everything from what they watch to what they're eating, even their thought process. And this is such a heavily loaded episode, and I can't wait to get around to it, because I can feel myself going into this episode, this being a 2-hour episode, once I finally get to it. But this episode is just great, and just that whole ending of it. And I'm not going to give all the ending away. I knew I said there were going to be some spoilers, but since I haven't covered this episode yet, and many of these episodes I haven't covered yet, so I don't want to give not necessarily a spoiler, but I just want to give the full plot away as to what this episode is about. But it's really great, and just giving a brief synopsis. So I'm going to move on to season four, and it's possibly for me the creepiest episode of them all, and that's the new exhibit in season four, in this shortened 18 episode hour long season. So we don't get those 27 to 37 episode seasons, but we do get an hour long. Some of them it works for, and probably half of them not so good. If it were up to me to say the worst of the seasons that don't have the greatest episodes, I would probably say it's 4 and 5, and you can kind of tell, not necessarily the quality has gone down, but just you can see that Serling was having a lot to do from directors, other producers, which now the directors were great and the producers were great, but there was a lot of behind the scenes things that were going on, which I think this should be played this way. No, I think it should be played this way. And then, of course, you had the major hindrance to a lot of great storytelling, and that is the sponsors. But this episode, the new exhibit, it's about this museum curator, and he goes and he basically tells all of these stories about these serial killers in this wax museum, and he's really gained, and he's really putting himself into the place of these particular wax figures that were in real life serial killers, like Jack the Ripper, and so on and so forth. But he gets uncomfortably close to them, and he puts himself almost in their position, to where to where they are. He has this sympathy for them that is just so eerie and unsettling throughout the entire episode. And just his callousness and carelessness for what he's doing and his feelings towards other people, like his wife, and of course there's his brother, and then there are, you know, when he's burying them, and he's like, oh well, this has happened, and it's just so unsettling. You know, I loved this, but this creeped me out when I would see those wax figures move, and just the music and just the feeling. It was just well played. All right, so now we're going to jump into season 5, and we're going to get to our final creepy episode. And for me, this is one of the creepier episodes. Now, there are a couple of other episodes within the run of the Twilight Zone, the original Twilight Zone. There's things like The Dummy and Caesar and Me, which is also in this season. But I just thought that this particular episode, and you probably know where I'm going with this, because this is also one of those episodes. When people think about the Twilight Zone, this is one of those episodes that they think about, and it's the Living Doll. It is so creepy. Just, you know, I'm going to kill you. And, you know, so basically to set the story up is there is this little girl. She gets this little doll that her mom gets her, and her stepfather, which is basically an asshole throughout the entire episode. And if there's one person that, you know, got that Twilight Zone cosmic justice coming to him, it definitely was him. He did so many things to the doll. He was, and not just to the doll, but it was just to his stepdaughter, his daughter, and it was just horrible. You know, just his nastiness towards her, and just unloving, you know, regard for her. And so it's like when he took his tumble, it's like, yeah, that was well deserved. Every single bit of it was well deserved. And this, for me, I mean, it was the music and just the way the doll was talking throughout, and, you know, just him, you know, looking at the doll. This is why to this day I don't care for dolls all that much. You know, I just, you know, and this thing probably scarred me as a child. I can't remember exactly the first time I saw it, but it was definitely in the early 80s when I first saw this episode, and it stuck with me for a while. So this is all 13 episodes for your Friday the 13th. I hope you guys enjoyed this special episode of the Twilight Zone podcast, Between Light, Shadow, Science, and Superstition. And I hope you guys join me for next week, and I'll jump right into that episode as soon as I finish this one. I'll see you guys in the fifth dimension. And the next episode is Nothing in the Dark. This episode for me was an episode I didn't fully understand until years later. So this episode starts with an older woman laying in a bed in a building that's about to get demolished. And she's afraid of death. And she's trying not to let death in, but death is trying to come in, trying to enter, trying to go ahead and take her. And there is just this sense of uneasiness, and just the way Agnes Moorehead played this role was so great. She just really embodied what a person maybe later in life, in the twilight of their life, would feel like, with just having this fear of death. And then there's these regulations of her thinking about some past things that happened to her in her own life, and seeing someone young and they're carefree, and now, you know, she didn't used to feel any particular way about that, about death, worrying about death, but now she's getting closer to the end of her life. She's really starting to think about this. And Robert Redford, he plays death in one of his first roles, as far as I can remember in the research that I've done on this. This was one of his first roles, so he's just really, really drawing her in. And, you know, death is not a bad thing. It's a welcome thing, especially when you get to this stage of your life. So her finally accepting that at the end, but it was just like I said, the music, the atmosphere, it's, you know, it's a constant thing throughout all of these episodes. And this is, you know, these episodes were really well done. All the episodes of the Twilight Zone, except for about, say, 10 episodes. But we'll get to those specific episodes, because even Rod Serling himself knew that he laid out some huge turds there, some turkeys, as he would say. So the next episode is The Last Rites of Jeff Myrtlebank. And on the surface, this episode seems to be a comedy, but it's more of a dark comedy, because there's this uneasiness that runs throughout the entire episode, from the very moment where the Huckleberry Finn references between the two young boys at the very beginning start to happen, when they see Mr. Myrtlebank himself come from the coffin. Even the actor, which is a famous actor, we'll talk about him when we get to this episode. But, you know, he played, well, I'm not going to jump into it, because that's a whole train right there in and of itself. But yeah, just, you know, him playing around, and just the all the characters and the way they're putting all of these little innuendos out there, and how they're starting the rumor mill, and how everyone is reacting to him, including his own mother and father. And and he's like, you know, at the very end, there was a very pivotal moment where he's like, you know, he's saying, you know, you really need to stop seeing things. He's saying this to his wife-to-be. They had just gotten engaged, and he's really playing on a lot of these different things. And there's this whole history about haints, which haints in the South is a really big thing, and it's just another word for ghost. There's a whole mythology about that, specifically in the area where I live. So I really connected with this episode, because there was so much that was going on with this episode, to say the least. But this was a great episode, and I just loved the way they just put everything together, and just this was a really great story. And like I said, there's a lot of history behind that, specifically in the area where I live myself, because I know a lot of the history, what they're talking about with the, because there's this color called haint blue, which a lot of the porches are painted blue so that the spirits can't cross over, and just the whole story with all of the the mythology behind it, with souls not being able to cross over and bottles being hung, which is a big thing in this area. So there's really some paranormal things going on here, and there's always these hints, but there's just that one thing at the very end where you just don't know exactly if it's exactly what's going on, but you kind of get a little bit of an answer to that, but not much of one. All right, so the next episode is Little Girl Lost. This episode is the episode, let me jump into the explanation, kind of like a little short synopsis of it right quick. And it's basically a mother and a father. They are awakened by the screams of their daughter, or just the calling out of their daughter from the fifth dimension. And it's just really, really great to see this. Now, this actual story was, it really inspired Poltergeist, which went on to inspire Stranger Things, the show itself. You know, you think of Will Byers from Stranger Things. He goes missing in the Upside Down. Well, it's the same thing with this, but the little girl, she's been, she's come up missing in the fifth dimension, so that, you know, within a wall in her room. So there's these all these parallels, and then you have Poltergeist, which has the same thing, going into another dimension with these ghosts and spirits and just all of this. So it's really well played.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Next week we show you the face of war, but the kind of portrait we venture to say you've never seen before. Dick York and William Reynolds star in The Purple Testament, the story of a man who can forecast death. That's next week on The Twilight Zone, The Purple Testament. We hope you'll join us. Thank you and good night.